welcome to that EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Today we are doing something slightly different. We are recording live here at Fleet and Mobility Live, and I've got the lovely JC with us. Morning, JC.
Good morning, everybody. And we've got a superstar of the industry here, somebody who's probably got it bigger than anybody else.
Okay. There we go. Well, you all worked it out now because you can see it. But it's the lovely Nigel Allsop, Fleet Director for Fleet Account Director for BT. Nigel, thanks again for joining us. It's a little bit of chaos here, everybody. Tell us a little bit about what you do today and why, and what difference it's making.
So I look after the commercials for the BT fleet. So that's 36,000 assets. And also the company cars, which is about 5,000 assets. Make sure that we drive towards the right strategy. Make sure that our strategy in terms of the fleet aligns with BT Group strategy. And make sure that we can keep the wheels turning for all of our operational engineers, all of our salespeople, right across the group. So it's big responsibility.
It's kind of all-encompassing for everything vehicles. Now, there are people out there, and I myself was one of them, that don't necessarily understand BT and Openreach and the division. Yeah. Just clear it up for us. Once and for all, help us all out.
So BT has six divisions under it, with Openreach being one. Openreach is has its own kind of... I suppose it's its own company, all right? And we have to have that because of the Ofcom regulations. So it has to be separate from the group. So Openreach are the people that put the pipes in the ground, that do all the connectivity, but they have to also work for each CP, so a communications provider, of which BT is one, across the board in a an equal fashion. So they need to kind of almost show independence.
Can I just applaud your acronym explanation? Well done. Because so many people, we throw out acronyms all the time. Yeah. Well done, Nigel. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
No,
carry
that's
on.
Fine, that's fine. So Openreach are really the fibre wing, right? So Openreach are building the Britain's digital backbone infrastructure. You know, circa 23,000 engineers. On average, 1 million miles a day driven by those engineers.
Wow.
I think Openreach have just hit 20 million homes passed in terms of full fibre rollout, with an ambition to get to 30 million by the end of the decade. So, you know, we are really, you know, and BT as a whole, connecting people across the UK. So the digital economy, you know, is pretty much BT driven.
Let's get into some numbers, Nigel. Huge fleet. What percentage of that have you managed to electrify thus far?
So we've got about 5,500 assets that are full EV.
Okay, and that's predominantly cars and light commercial?
So it's predominantly small and medium vehicles.
Yeah.
And then we're moving into more EVs in the car space. So we've just changed the salary sacrifice scheme and the company car scheme. So now all our business needs drivers and our salary sacrifice is full EV. So as people finish their leases now, they're moving into the EV. So cars are probably a little bit behind, but in terms of vans, we're about 5,500.
Wow. And I guess you've got some quite specialist vehicles as well, because you have to go places that few others go to. What else is on your fleet that you're scratching your head thinking, how am I going to do that?
So we've got, so I guess it goes from one end of the spectrum to the other. So at one end of the spectrum, you've got outside broadcast vehicles for BT Sport. Of course, you don't want one of those to break down, right? Because obviously that's really going to cause you an issue. And then at the other end of the spectrum, in terms of Openreach, got some really weird and wonderful things. They've got something called Ditch Witch, which is, scars a line in the soft verge at the same time as putting the cable in. So they've got all, pole erection units, pole carrying units, cable recovery units. And then you've got the logistic arm of BT as well, which is a supply chain as well. So you've got, I think, 72 different types of vehicles with 172 different racking specifications.
Wow. That is a challenging environment to electrify. But what I'm excited about because I would be, is that you've gone the vans first, it seems. Almost ahead of the cars, or at least moving at a faster pace. Is there a business reason for that, or is it just so happens that that was the easiest place to start for BT?
So we've committed to that we're going to be net zero by 2030. And to do that, obviously, as leases come up on vehicles, and we take somewhere, you know, between a 7-year lease at the moment, we have to transfer. We can't keep going to ICE vehicle after ICE vehicle. So at some point, you've got to make the switch. And the good news of us, with having that amount of people in the group, we could dip our toe over time and try to get things right step by step. So, you know, we're still looking for early adopters in the EV space in terms of engineers putting their hands up to want to be someone who drives an EV. And that gives us a bit more of a kind of a longer term rollout, but it also gives us time to kind of solidify the strategy to make sure that we get it right.
And that it really is important to get it right, isn't
yes.
it? And because when I think of a BT van, and I'm thinking probably of one particular type, but there are, as we've talked about, there are a myriad.
Yes.
But just even with the ladder racks and the kind of weight that you've got in the vehicle, the areas that you're driving, you're out in all weathers, yeah. day and night, all of those challenges that you have to face. How are you sort of navigating all of those variances? Is it a sort of a test and learn every time you put a new one on?
So the average kind of open reach racking is about 250 kilos, and that's before they put the kit in it. So once you've got a fully kitted, racked out, you know, engineering vehicle, the average open reach engineer does about 45 miles a day, but that's the average. So that's not the Highland and Islands and low Cornwall, you know, and you know all of the weird and wonderful places they go to in North Wales, etc. So you've got to make sure that the vehicles that we bought in terms of the medium and the smaller EVs to start with, we put them through a massive rigorous load of testing. So we had various kind of manufacturers come to us, give us the vehicles for a week. We loaded them up with sandbags to simulate how many miles we're going to do. We then did suburban, urban, rural driving, and watch that needle, you know, disappear in terms of how far they were going to go. And that was only one of, you know, the whole life costs in terms of what we were getting for the vehicle. And then we just put it all into a massive, massive spreadsheet to look at what the vehicle we were going to use. And I guess the other area that we want, we need engineers engineering. We don't want people on the side of the road broken down. So the service that manufacturer can provide is also paramount to us as well. And of course, you know, at 5,500, we're still in the early days of EVs, not kind of 6, 7, 8 years time. Yeah. So obviously things will wear out over time. And I'm hoping obviously the garage mechanics become more trained, et cetera, et cetera. So we had to work really closely with Holman to make sure that all of their network had the right skill level to be able to cope with us. But yeah, I mean, you know, it probably took, I'd say, about 2 months of testing to get to where we wanted to get to with the right vehicles for the job.
You say that your early doors in terms of your transition, 5,500 vehicles need service, maintenance, yep. repair, and looking after. What are the three key things that you have learned thus far on your journey to electrification that might be of use to our audience?
All one of them.
hundreds, 15.
Sorry, two.
Can you hear the noise down, all of you millions of people out there?
No, at the back, please. So I guess for me, I mean, the big takeaways. So an EV, year one, year two, is actually cheaper than an ICE vehicle. So maintenance is cheaper.
Yeah.
I guess when vehicles go in, the maintenance might be a bit longer and might be a little bit more expensive, but actually it's more infrequent.
Yes.
So EVs earlier on definitely pay back in terms of how they kind of hit the bottom line.
Yep.
That would be a massive takeout. I guess EV anxiety is something that I would also say that needs behavioural change. And I would say across the group, I would say that's probably more at the management level than the individual driver levels, because obviously we need engineers engineering.
Yeah.
We don't want engineers having downtime because, you know, they're having to fill up in the day. So I guess range anxiety is number two. And then I would say, for me, I think number three would be those that have made the switch, the ones that I've interviewed and spoken to, wouldn't go back. So, but I guess when you've got a massive organisation, the people that put their hands up to take a vehicle, the early adopters, tend to be the people that are already behind what you wanted to do anyway. So it's almost like a bias towards being quite content with it. So we don't swap many EVs back from engineers that can't cope with them. So they'll be my three takeaways.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
You talked about you need engineers engineering.
Yes.
Presumably that also means that you need managers managing.
Correct.
Which means that you need data in order to convince people. And the Correct. Ones that are most difficult to convince are those who are those managers Yes. who have to manage the system. Do you use a data-led approach to convince managers to get on board with EVs? Do you try and win hearts and minds? Do you have some strategic pressure that's brought to bear? How do you manage that shift in perception?
So I think a little bit of all of what you've said. So hearts and minds are massive, right? You've got to lead a pull culture. You can't force someone to do something. And it's not the way to get someone invested in it, first and foremost. So I think a lot of this is communication at the right level. But behind communication, and BT does this very well, we are quite involved in data of all sorts. So knowing that a person can cope with an EV and will need to charge up once or twice, and therefore we have a charger available for them either in the network, even one of our buildings, or at their home, kind of also kind of solidifies that can kind of make the next step change. But it's making sure that we convince, almost pull them to the right decision. So data is massive, and we're just about to roll out telematics across BT. So we'll be using more data off, the telemetry data. We'll be using Holman's data, integrating both together. So it gives us a really convincing picture of how many we can have, how many we need to take, and are we on top of our commitments to reach net zero?
Yes.
So I guess it's pressure from above, but it's looking at the right data path and making sure that at this point, we're still able to take the early adopters, make sure that it's the right tool for the right person at the right time.
Yeah.
You've mentioned Holman a couple of times, and here at the EV Cafe, we talk very much about the EV ecosystem.
Yes.
How are you getting to grips with collaboration and working with partners? How important is that to you? How do you think it will play a part in the future?
So I think it's massive. I can only give you my experience of being here for 2 years. And I think BT, because of the size of them, in terms of telecommunications, very good at looking inwards. In fleet, it's looking outwards. Okay, so I have some really good contacts in the fleet world, so Centrica, Royal Mail, etc., etc. And because we're not in competition with these other big fleets, so the one thing I really like is you can get around a table and look at how other people and what their operating models are first and foremost. And I find that really good, and it's a really good culture to be in, by the way. And I think the fleet culture, everyone has been here for an inordinate amount of time because it's a really good, fun place to be, right? So I think first and foremost, getting good relationships with people is super important. But then I come back from France over in the summer. I've got an EV now, so I drove it to Bordeaux. And the French network is just unbelievable. So there are EV stops everywhere. There was no queuing system. They were working. And it was just an absolute joy. Of course, came back to Dover. I think I got off at Cobham Services. The first EVs weren't working. There was a crash just outside the junction, so I couldn't get off the services. And so it just turned into a really, really stressful experience, right? Now, if you're running a business where your role is to get people to mountain masts for 5G, or to get down in holes in the middle of London, or to get to the Scilly Isles, etc., you need people to be able to be moving mobile. So for me, the final part of the puzzle is to look at what commercial leverage we can get as a big group to improve the infrastructure and make sure that there are more opportunities for BT and Openreach to charge in the day if they need to, quickly, and move on. And that's probably an area that commercially we're looking at.
I think it's important to recognise you've just done only a couple of years in this role, right? What you've said, but you are tackling one of the biggest challenges in the fleet sector. I mean, yes. It would be hard to say that there is hard to see that there's a much more challenging fleet. What's prepared you for this? I mean, when you left school, did you think, I want to go and manage one of the, or be like strategically involved in one of the largest fleets in the UK? Or did you want to fly to the moon or something?
It's interesting, really. So I've been in BT and Openreach for 28 years. And I know I don't look like it.
Child labour?
And I actually joined at 25. And I've done 19 jobs in those 28 years.
Wow.
And so I started as an engineer. So I had a van. I was up poles and down holes. I've done the operational management. I've done transformation programs. I've done consultants, commercial change. So I guess what's prepared me is I know what BT do. And I might not have known, obviously, the fleet part of it, but I know the biggest tool that BT and Openreach need for their what they do is connecting people, is they need transport. And I know what an engineer needs to carry, I know what they, how much weight they need. I had to learn more about the logistics part of BT. But the reality is, if you know what your customer, because my customer is the engineer, and their customers are people that need broadband and fiber and converged networks. And Ethernet, I've also worked in Ethernet as well, which is a highly pressurised area. You know very quickly if a bank goes off connectivity or a hospital goes down. So I guess for me, I've come at this from not the fleet end, I've come at this from what do we do, how do we do it, and what tools do we need to do it? And the biggest tool you can use is a van. So I built my team when I came across to this with that in mind. So 90% of my team are not fleet people. They are from different lines of business, consumer business, corporate functions, Openreach. But the one area that I have been consistent in terms of proper fleet and support is the compliance area, obviously, because that is a very specific and specialised area that you need very good depth of knowledge to operate in.
Yeah.
But the other part is, I've met loads of really, really helpful fleet people that have been in the industry for a long time. And I love kind of building relationships with people because, BT is a people business. Openreach is a people business. What we do connects people. Mm. And all the fleet people I've met so far in the industry are all very similar. And they all look out for you. So I just went on a road trip saying, look, this is what we want to do. This is what we need to do. How are you guys doing it? What are you doing? And just built up a kind of strategic plan off the back of that.
It does feel that the industry is pulling together, doesn't it? I mean, we're here in Fleet Mobility Live, and there are so many companies like kind of providing some sort of service. And I know there's some financial gain behind a lot of what we're all doing, and that's, I understand that. We've all got to stay in business, but there is a genuine sort of almost philanthropic approach to this challenge of net zero, and you know, some people would love to throw it out, but actually it is delivering a difference, and it's delivering the differences in so many different ways. What do you believe that the differences that are being made for the industry at the moment through this collaboration?
So for me, I mean, certainly from a BT perspective, you know, we are a big brand, and brand image is massive to us. You know, it's not a great look if you turn up outside a house to fix their, you know, fibre in a van that's 7 or 8 years old with a few dents in it. You know, that's not a good look for us first and foremost, right? So having a futuristic van that's kind of, and we're, you know, BTR at the cutting edge of telecommunications. Yeah. So brand's image is massive for us, but it's the right thing to be sustainable. You know, BT have been sustainable for many, many years in terms of the way they operate. And the fleet is probably about 19% of our entire kind of emission output. So we definitely need to be making sure that, you know, those vehicles are making a difference for us.
One of the big players in the electrification world is Elon Musk. And Elon Musk is also famous for Starlink.
Yes.
And I'm just sitting here thinking, what's the trajectory? Because I know you guys at Martlesham and the research establishment have a vision of what the world will look like in 10, 20 years' time. And you're already planning what the future looks like. What does the future look like in a world where Starlink is potentially, or something similar, is the way in which we communicate rather than fibre or copper?
So, funny enough, I asked a very similar question not long ago. So people always want fixed connectivity, and even more so now, obviously through the pandemic, we were never as busy, you know, putting cable in the ground, obviously because the roads were a lot quieter in terms of people working from home. So bandwidth is something that is only going exponentially one way, and secure bandwidth is the next kind of next part. So secure lines that are in the ground, even though you may be working over a converged network, secure technology end to end is really important. And so I think it will be, the future will be a combination of everything, but I think security and bandwidth are two things that go hand in hand in terms of the way we're going to be operating.
Yeah, I would agree with you entirely. I think that's the right response from the business. And the other question that Paul touched on was net zero and the politics of sustainability. As a provider of services to government, you need to be very aware of changes in political parties and the nuances around net zero. If government comes in and says, you know, net zero, if it's reform, come in and say net zero doesn't exist anymore, do you keep electrifying because it's the right thing to do, or does it stop being the right thing to do?
So I think we will do the right thing for BT, okay? And that's probably a politician's answer. So I think we will do the right thing for us to make sure that our customers know that we are invested in a sustainable future. First and foremost, I think the industry is on a pivoting point where it is starting to go into sustainability and can't pull backwards very quickly. So for us, I think the technology will evolve. You're seeing some vans and you're seeing some, you know, some of the ranges on cars now, you know, 500-600 miles. So for us, as long as the infrastructure's there, that's absolutely fine. You know, the new vans, what we need is obviously vans that can charge rapidly at the same time as then take enough load to then be able to do the day job. So speed of charging is equally, or the power intake is equally as important in terms of the mileage you can get out of the vehicle. So those two things need to come from the car industry, which I think is a little bit more advanced, back into the vans, into the commercial market, and that will put us in a good stead. In terms of back to the point, you know, I think BT will always do the right thing for the customer, to be seen to be doing the right thing. And, you know, we've been sustainable for many, 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 many years off our own back and publicising it, et cetera, through quite a few governments. So I think, you know, we will forge our own path in the right way.
I think, you know, I mean, you've spoken to many drivers, right? You said you've interviewed many of the drivers, and I think we would all agree that actually it's just a nicer drive.
Yeah.
And it's easier and simpler, and hopefully there'll be less accidents, there'll be less downtime, they'll be more productive. And actually, ultimately, the total cost of ownership, that the whole life piece over that seven-year period, is going to make a difference. Is that where you think it's going?
Let's be honest. Our new EV vans, etc., come with a whole heap of safety features that the old vans didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, even and having driven the Transit into a few things over many years when I was a lot younger, a few warning lights and a few beeping things in the camera would have helped me, right?
Yeah.
So our engineers, they drive, you know, so in Cornwall, you'll see more wing mirrors knocked off because of the width of the roads, etc. They drive through some terrible conditions. So any safety features that are current with the modern vehicles is a real selling point for us. And likewise, putting telematics into, obviously, the BT fleet now, that comes with our ability to have a responsibility to help our drivers be the best they can be, help our engineers drive the best they can be. And I think from a moral obligation to make sure members of the public are safe, make sure that our people are safe, my question and to the union is, why would you not let us do this? So, I think, you know, after a long consultation, that they agree that it's the right thing to do for our people. So I think it would be remiss of me to say, as a technology company, that technology isn't playing a crucial part in us going forward.
Fantastic. So, Nigel, we've focused a lot on the job, right? On the sort of vehicles and the strategic development. But I'm interested in Nigel.
He's
a nice guy. He is a nice guy. But I think that whole, because not everybody comes into the industry and immediately wants to reach out and connect with other fleet providers or other fleet users. Yeah. And I think you've come in with this very warm and connecting kind of mindset. Has that always been the way? Did you grow up that way? Is it at school? How's it?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've always been very sociable. I've always been I've been inquisitive. So I think it's inquisitive. How does that work? What do I need to know about it? What will make me be more au fait with what I'm doing with this? And then I think it's the fact that I've had kind of so many jobs within BT. It forces you to look outside and speak to people there's a lot of people with a lot of experience that you can get from them. And then bring your passion and your kind of your drive with that experience, putting a bit of technology in, and hey presto, you're off, aren't you? So I've always enjoyed it. I think I've really enjoyed the fleet. I've had more fun in these last 2 years than I've had probably for 26 years because it has been completely out of my comfort zone. But I keep coming back to, I know what I need to do for us. I know what service we need to hit. So I need to go to speak to Centrica. I need to go and speak to Royal Mail, because if I don't, then I'm not going to be fully informed to present the strategy back to the group to say, hey, this is where we're going. And if that strategy doesn't align with BT strategy, it's dead in the water. So for me, it's about really reaching out to a lot of people that have a lot more experience around fleet than me. And I think that's quite humbling, and I think that's quite a nice thing to be. Yeah. So I enjoy it. And I've always like that, always been inquisitive, always wanted to find out more stuff. And it's just the way I am, I think.
Nigel, you're a hugely busy human being, and with a fleet the size of yours, you could attract into your office anybody that you wanted to speak to. Yet here you are at Fleet and Mobility Live, taking your time to come and talk to people. What brings you to an event like this? Because you don't need to tell anybody how good BT is, but you're here making connections, I guess.
Well, I think, like I said earlier, BT are very kind of insular looking in terms of they are big enough to almost be their own market in terms of driving themselves forward. But that's not me and my team. I've told you most of my team are fleet people. Don't get me wrong, there are a lot of fleet people in Openreach. There's a lot of fleet people across BT in the supply chain that have a wealth of experience. But again, that inquisitive nature, I need to be horizon gazing of what's coming up, what new vehicles we've got, what charging opportunities there are, what are other big fleets doing, what's the technology around kind of data. How do we incorporate that data in terms of making us safer, more efficient? Who's competing against what? And, you know, what's their unique selling point? And I think it's that inquisitiveness again. You know, this is where I should be. Yeah. If I'm not here and I'm looking insular, I'm not doing my job to the right justice it needs to be done, would be my answer.
And it was your answer.
Correct, it was my answer.
So I'm curious about what you do when you're not working. Because you could be really busy. We can all do a lot all of the time.
What does a weekend look
like? Yeah.
So I am a famous roast cooker. Every Sunday.
Was that an invitation? I heard an invitation. Roasties.
I like to think my roasts are some of the best.
Okay.
And that started off with my mother-in-law and my mum weren't particularly good at roasts, so I used to mark them when they were doing it on a Sunday. My mum regularly...
Risky business.
My mum regularly took a 3 out of 10 and slowly has built herself up to an 8. So... Yeah, we're benefiting. My mother-in-law was always slightly better, which was a bit painful for my mum to swallow, but hopefully they won't listen to this. So I always do a roast on a Sunday, and I like to cycle as well. So I like to road bike. Well, I say road bike. I have a pain cave with a turbo trainer.
Oh, so you don't go out on the road?
I do go out on the road on a Sunday, but in the week I tend to sweat and shout in the garage a little bit and... the neighbours probably think there's a dead animal in there. So,
we have our own cyclist on the EV Cafe team, and she is quite the the force majeure in the cycling world. So what's the pinnacle of your cycling achievements?
So I've done three stages of the Étape de Tours, so the Tour de France toughest stages.
Fantastic. Yeah, In one day? No, that's where you...
Yeah, 3 years. 3 years. So I did. So it's only one stage. So right. Every year they do like the Étape de Tour. It's like London Marathon. It's right. So they normally do a mountain stage, and you can see us on really small and built for mountains.
Live.
I'm good at the downhill, as you can imagine. But I really gets me out of bed to do that. And then when you watch the real cyclists do the tour. And they go up twice as fast as you. It really puts a bit of a dent in what you've just done. But it's great fun.
I suppose cycling's a really good metaphor for your work, in that there are days when there are dead flat roads and it feels like a breeze.
Yeah.
And there's the Col de Tourmalet, which is just...
Which I've done in Tourmalet.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to pick a mountain.
And it's the
Tourmalet.
The hardest mountain I've ever done.
Absolutely. Wow. Brutal,
yeah.
Talk to us about a day in your professional life that has been the Col de Tourmalet, where you've had to really dig deep and question whether you made the right choice to be a fleet manager.
So it's fleet as well, is it, right? So I think, obviously the build-up to transitioning from our old supplier to our new supplier was obviously me learning fleet, trying to keep everything on track in terms of an October switchover. Communicating to all of the whole of the group that we've got a brand new app that's going to be fantastic and everyone's going to use it, etc. Day one, the servers go down, I think. we've got probably about 15,000 people trying to get a job, and they can't log on to their app. So it was pretty hectic. But again, it's a challenge you can overcome pretty quickly. I guess it also then started a natural kind of, is this new provider going to be as good as the old provider? Mm. So, and that comes from our engineers wanting to go out and drive to get... They don't see driving as part of the job. They see fixing customers and installing customers your fibre as part of their job, right? So anything that can help them do that better, they are behind. Anything that they think may hinder them, they also, you know, there's a groundswell of...
Yeah, the exact opposite. Yeah,
so I think that's fairly challenging. But again, you know, these things happen. Yeah. And I think when you've been through... So I've been through the Olympics, I've been through, obviously, COVID, I've been through royal visits, outages, you know, on Ethernet. I think at the end of the day, you've just got to look at what difference you can make, what you can communicate, step by step, chunk it down and move forward.
It feels like that you've learned from the knocks and learned that actually tomorrow comes and the knocks will come.
Yeah, of course
but
it will.
Tomorrow comes well, and it's a bright, shiny
day.
This
job is always going to be challenging. And I guess I'll go back to the cycling metaphor. You know, I live on the levels. I can go out for 100 miles on the flat every day of the week, but I live on the edge of the Mendips. So it's good to go out and challenge yourself. It's good. And then from the inquisitiveness, you want a slightly quicker pair of socks.
Or a faster
pair of glasses or something, you know, just to give you that edge in terms of when you are going to make. Like, so you're always looking for something else and something better. A bike obviously helps in that area more than the socks. I was joking there, but
You're inquisitive. You're looking ahead. You're looking at the horizon. What do you see on the horizon for this industry? Perhaps, you know, obviously it's going to be through a sector that you're involved in. But what are you seeing on the horizon that kind of gives you hope or gives you a sense of excitement?
Yeah, so I think I've seen that the fleet industry is on that point of tipping in terms of, right, we've got both feet in full electrification. I know we've tinkered around, you know, the edges and hydrogen, et cetera, and we've looked at, you know, how we can be more sustainable with the combustion engine, et cetera. So for me, I think it's on that very cusp, you know, more EV sales for cars than ever before. So I would like to see the government do more around infrastructure and really push the envelope on that. And I think that is the next probably 5, 6, 7 years for us. In terms of kind of us, you know, telecommunications can change rapidly. You know, it's an industry that's very competitive, very tech driven, something new can come out. But I think the one thing that I always know is people like to connect, people like to talk, people like to, you know. So if anything, COVID taught us more than anything else that connectivity is really important. So that will not change going forward.
You're absolutely right. This is always a people business first.
Massively.
Yeah. You mentioned the H word, and this is going to be my final question. Hydrogen.
Yes.
You're an experienced fleet manager now. You've evaluated various options.
Yep.
What part, if any, do you think hydrogen will play in our transport future?
So I think, personally, it's probably more supply chain driven. Base-to-base circuits where you know you're going from point A to point B on a regular basis, again with autonomous vehicles. I think hydrogen can play a strong part there. The problem with Openreach, the problem with BT, you know, we are a transient company in terms of trying to reach the areas that people have no connectivity or have lower speed connectivity. So we are constantly almost nomadic in terms of what we do. So at the moment, hydrogen doesn't suit us. So I would say, and from the people I've spoken to, and I think we have also seen like a huge electric lorry, but the amount of power for those lorries is just phenomenal. You need a, you know, you almost need a power station. You see it going down the road and all the lights are going off down the road as it goes along. So I think there's a little bit more to be done in absolutely huge HGV, you know, EV area. But for me, hydrogen's point to point.
Yeah, I don't know what I see about hydrogen, if I'm being honest. I look at it and I think, well, has it really got a chance for infrastructure, for cost, and the speed of development within the electrification world? You know, electric, battery electric, you know, the big trucks that you talked about can already do a heck of a distance. Yes. And it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody's going to invest in an alternative. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think, like I say, I think when that tipping point happens, obviously the marginal kind of not quite, you know, they haven't quite made enough impact in the market, but the funding dries up, you know, the technology is done to keep up pace. Before you know it, the tipping point's with EV all the way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, we have a closing tradition on the EV Cafe Takeaway.
I love, well, of course I know it. Of course I know it.
Well done, well done. Yeah. So we have the closure juice, and it's not the actual wand, but it's better because this is my selfie stick, and my selfie stick, in some amazing way, has given me the strange career that I have today. So that's pretty magic. So I'm going to hand you the magic wand.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so you now have one wish. And you can use that wish as you will. Some people have asked for like a personal chef. We had somebody yesterday just went, I don't want anything.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. But what would you use your one wish for?
Oh, so I'd be personal in my wishes. Just as good. So I would wish everyone that I know to be healthy and prosperous and to look out for each other would be my wish.
Look out for each other. That, I mean, that is so important.
Yeah.
And that healthy, prosperous, because we deal with a lot of tough stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think sometimes you get so into what you're doing as a, you know, as your, you know, your work, what you do outside of work. And it takes one thing for something all of a sudden to be flipped upside down. And, everyone's in the same boat with these things. So I think family, stick together, work together, friends, you know, all of that. Keep close to the people that
I think
have your back.
It's a wish that we can all kind of execute for you. We all play our part in that. And I think, you know, as the EV Cafe, we've always stood for mental health.
Let's keep
no.
No. That was my second wish.
Without a career.
That's my second wish, Alex.
I can get you one. I can get
you the stick. I'll give you the stick. I'll swap it for the
I'll
mic.
Get you one. This has been great, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been really good. And for me, you are the complete fleet manager. Because you've sat there and you've talked about things which aren't about fleet directly.
Yeah.
They're more strategic and challenging and much bigger business challenges. And you've got that.
Wow.
And you've got the fleet stuff. And you're doing it at scale. And you're being cautious, yet you remain inquisitive. And that, for me, is the key.
Oh, thank you.
We need to be inquisitive,
yeah,
and seek to understand. The world is all too quick to say, that won't work, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
Go find out.
Yeah.
Go see. Get off your bum, like you do.
Yeah.
Come out here and try stuff.
File it. Yeah.
It might fail.
Yeah.
But you've tried it and you know for yourself. And that, to me, is power.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Fail fast.
Yeah.
That's it.
Fail fast.
But yeah. Do you know what? I don't think you have failed. And I know there's lots of probably little things along the way.
Oh, no, made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, made a lot of mistakes.
But
yeah,
you have set the course and you have made a massive migration from one business to another in terms of fleet management, and which was no small thing. And, we could explore that in detail, but that was no small thing. And what I really love, and I heard two things really, is that experience across your whole... all of those elements that you did 19 jobs in 26 years or something like that, roughly. And then all of that then funneling into how do we make this better?
Yeah.
How do we deliver this for my customer, the engineer? And the other thing that I heard, which was, I think, genius, we encourage it all of the time, but not everybody does it, is the communication and collaboration with industry peers, but also your team broadly.
100%.
Bringing people in from all across the business.
You have to have a vision, because people can get behind a vision.
Yeah.
A strategy, but it needs to have a North Star. You need to be able to say, this is where we are, this is where we're going. And if you haven't got that, it makes it really hard to make the jump from one thing to another.
Yeah, that 2030 commitment to net zero, that movement forward to building a massive electric fleet, it's quite outstanding. And I know that you're very open to being reached out to. So,
yes,
everybody, you are welcome to connect with Nigel Allsopp from BT.
We've trebled the audience now. There's four people.
There's hundreds watching and listening right now at home. And so reach out to Nigel. Check out his journey. You can hear this and other articles. Many, you're contributing to quite a lot these days, I know. So it's fantastic to learn from all of this, and you can learn from a number of other fleet managers on our podcast and a lot of other industry providers, because we're a big community and you can experience that community through the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. Head on over to our website, join and follow us on our socials and LinkedIn and all of that good stuff. But Nigel,
thank you very much. Bonjour.
Thank you, been a joy.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yes, Nigel.
Thank you.
Bless you.